This episode is sponsored in part by Sacred, a not-for-profit that helps improve lives in the rural Mexican communities where heritage agave spirits are made. Since we obtained our official not-for-profit status from the IRS back in 2017, Sacred has gifted more than 32,000 Tobola agave seedlings to families in rural Oaxaca. These families are finding their cultural heritage at risk as access to agave is getting harder and harder due to the global explosion of interest in mezcal. Even as we continue to expand this program, we've also recently helped to launch a program that will build out 3 greenhouses in rural Jalisco to help protect 4 at-risk varieties of agave and 3 at-risk varieties of trees, while at the same time preventing these rare wildlands in Jalisco from becoming still more Blue Weber farms. To learn about these and other programs, visit sacred.mx. That's sacred.mx. If you love heritage agave spirits, please consider helping us protect that cultural heritage with a tax-deductible donation this holiday season at sacred.mx. Hey, Chicago, there's a gallery show going on that you won't want to miss. It's called Agave, and it features artwork made primarily from agave fibers left over from mezcaleros in Oaxaca. I say primarily because there's also a musical instrument that looks something like a didgeridoo, but made from the heart and quixote of a madrecuiche. Buy that and record a version of our theme song with it, and we'll feature it on this podcast. Agave will be on display in the Chase Gallery at the Epiphany Center for the Arts from now until April 9th. And every first Thursday, a different agave spirits company will be on hand to sample out some of the liquid agave art that we love so much. For details, visit epiphanyshy.com. That's EPIPHANYCHI.COM. Or follow the link from this episode page at agaveroadtrip.com. Hope to bump into you there. I'm Lou Bank.
I am Chava Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. And we're coming to you recorded from Miami
live,
Beach.
Live.
It's not live. We're not live. Well, I guess we're live as we're speaking. By the time people hear it, it's not going to. I guess, and we don't have a studio audience, and there's no laugh track. Anyway, we're coming from Art Basil. Did we decide Basil or Basil?
I think Basil.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Art Basil in Miami Beach, recording in our car because we have to get these episodes done.
Yes, while we're together, because we think they come across better when we're together than we're looking the other person's face on a small Zoom.
I think
screen.
So. Though we make Roy's life hell because you don't know how to put your mouth up against your mic.
I swear to God, I have a good microphone technique. I think
sure,
so.
Whatever. We'll let Roy decide.
Anyways, today I want to talk about something we were discussing a little bit lately, that we should go back to some of the basics, right?
Yeah.
I think we've talked, we've gotten into like extremely, extremely specific rabbit holes. And now we're asking ourselves if some of the things of the first season where we just covered how mezcal is made, we didn't delve enough into some of the intrinsicities.
Well, as a starting point, you know, I think it works. I think those episodes work as a starting point. But having said that, you know, I think it's of value for us as we're now 70 some episodes in, to not make people scroll all the way back to the beginning to learn about something like something basic like ensembles.
And this is not what I call a basic episode, actually.
No.
And the reason is, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we talk about when we refer to agave spirits, where science, history, and cultural practices collide. And this
is too many things for my head to wrap around.
Well, this is the ultimate authorship, where it's the context where the things are being made, the decisions that the people are making because of the traditions in which they learned. Everything.
Is it? I don't know that I agree.
Let's talk about this, and then you'll tell me if you agree.
Okay, so what's an ensemble?
So an ensemble is basically a agave spirit that exists, that it's not a single single agave expression, right?
Right. There are multiple kinds of agave, you know, 200 to 300 different varieties of agave, depending on who you talk to and what day. Two to three. So it's different varieties of agave that are utilized to make
species or varieties.
Well, but it could also be multiple varieties within a species.
Correct. Yeah.
So just multiple kinds of agave were used to make the spirit. We're cooked, sometimes cooked together and milled together and fermented together, and sometimes separately they were processed into alcohol and then blended afterwards. But basically, your sugar sources come from multiple agaves as opposed to this is Espadín.
Yes, and we've done an episode about this before.
Have we?
But yes, we have. But there's this very important distinction of what we said in that episode and what we are going to try to explore right now.
Really?
Yes, it is. And this was one of the biggest realizations that I had now that I've been traveling to Michoacán and that I've been listening to some of Mezcaleros in Chihuahua. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, usually an ensemble will be explained to you in the sense that, well, you have a bunch of different wild agaves around you. You are going to be harvesting every year a certain amount of them.
Whichever come to, right, that reach maturation, that start to produce that reproductive quiote, those are the ones that you're going to harvest before they burn up all their sugars.
Exactly. So in a way, what they're, like, the way we usually traditionally explain ensembles is like randomness. Whatever is ready, I'm going to harvest it, and I don't have a traditional recipe that I'm going to try to replicate every time.
Like, I'm going to use 40 kilos of this, or I guess 400 kilos of this and 200 of that, right?
Yeah, or even as fine as that. Even as fine as 40 kilos in this 12-ton cook. What I'm starting to realize now after being interviewing more people is that there are some ensembles recipes that are very traditional and that will replicate it every year. So we were just in the region of Saguayo, that's almost border of Jalisco and Michoacán.
Uh-huh.
There's clay distillation there, which is
right on.
Really beautiful and wonderful. And yes, I want to go more there. And what they're explaining to us is they have Bruto and Manso in the area. And they love the flavor of Bruto, but it yields very little, more if you're distilling with clay. So they have to use Manso in order to have the sugars.
And they called it Manso.
They call it Manso.
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. Right? Yeah.
There's so much that I would need to unpack later in other episodes about this region. Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm still not confident enough of the things that I've understood when talking to them. But there is a recipe there. And we're asking them, like, do you ever change this? Like, what if you have more Manso and more Bruto? They're like, no. We have our recipe. We have our percentages. We respect those in every run or every batch that we do. Hmm. The second example that I have of
really?
This...
Really? So if they don't have enough of one or they have too much of another, they just... What do they do?
Well, I'm sure they might be open to improvising, but they will try, or at least this is what they told us. They will try to keep it consistent.
Interesting. Okay.
That second example, I was editing an interview from a guy in Chihuahua, Dolores, from a brand that it's called Cumbrita de la Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was saying that he has a type of agave that he calls lechuguilla. I saw it somewhere that the species was described as bovicornuta, but I'm not tremendously sure of that.
I had a couple of those at the Mezcal Fest in Mexico City.
Cumbrita
last
de la Sierra?
No, Bobby
Cornuta.
Bobby Carnuta, that was it. What the hell?
Yeah, well, we just saw a car with a very bad shape. But what he was describing is that he will add Sotol into his fermentation tanks to kickstart fermentation.
Sotol?
Sotol.
Wait, when you're saying Sotol, you're talking about the plant or you're talking about the distillation?
I'm talking about the plant.
Oh.
And...
Is weird. It contradicts everything you've told me, but keep going.
This contradicts everything that I know because Sotol usually doesn't have a really high sugar count, right?
This is what I'm saying.
So you'll throw something in there. Ooh, we might be hit by a car in a second.
It's okay.
Nah? Okay, great. So
you usually throw in there.
So you usually throw it in there to kickstart fermentation, and that's so strange.
It's contradictory to what we know about Sotol.
Exactly. And the other thing that it's like, the way he was describing this was extremely close to, we just made an episode about pulque being added to fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
The way this guy was talking about Sotol, it was almost like he was talking about pulque. He was saying that if he doesn't add this at all, fermentations will give him no yield.
And you're wondering whether or not that's true. Well, or if this is just something that he's been told.
Yeah,
kind of like when we asked Amando about all the Sotol, he said, oh, you can't use that to make alcohol because it doesn't ferment.
And then second level of ensemble strategy that this guy described, he said, there's this agave that is extremely rare in the area. Mm-hmm. We can only collect like 5 kilos, 10 kilos of this because it's like small, it grows in really difficult places. We call it chawi, and it's super sweet. So we add it to certain batches to make the, I'm not going to use the word smoother, but he said like it makes it more drinkable. It makes the agave spirit more drinkable and sweeter and people like it.
Huh.
So all of these suggests ensembles where people are very consciously choosing certain agaves, both for their flavors, flavor profiles, and for the efficiency of the process. In order to get certain flavors that they find fortunate, but at the same time, having enough spirits for it to be commercially successful or commercially viable.
Interesting. I like the theory, and I guess it's not really even a theory.
No. These are things that they've told me, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I'll take back what I've always said about you just throw in whatever the hell's there.
Right. Yeah, go.
So then where does the idea of the field blend come in?
You know what? I'm starting to think that sometimes we just understand what we want to understand.
And so we, like, this is just a gringo thing or gringex thing. Sorry, gringexes.
Sort of, kind of. I think sometimes we ask the question with the answer.
Oh, without question.
Right?
We tell them,
like, this is why you do this, right? And I mean, I do this all the time with certain gringos, and I apologize, but sometimes you just don't want to spend half an hour giving an answer.
Yeah.
So just be like, sure, kid. And more when they ask you in English, and then like you're going to be struggling for.
Yeah.
So I cannot say that is not the case with a lot of other guys, but I think if we ask more careful questions about the ensemble strategy, we might get some more interesting answers that are still not out there.
Oh, you know, and the thing I really love about this is it becomes yet another example of something where there is no single correct answer. I guarantee you somebody is just throwing in whatever the heck they found, right? And then somebody else is a very careful recipe they're following. And
the best part about this is also you get to understand so much of the expertise of each, like there's another level of complexity.
Yeah.
Another level of expertise and capacity and expression that mezcaleros have.
God, you know, yes. Because it feels like we're about at the end, and if this causes us to go even further apologize in advance. But you know, when I think about the Tobalá side by side tasting that I do with the Victor Ramos Tobalás, right, where you can take three different Tobalás that Victor Ramos made in Miahuatlán over an 18-month period. Right? Like you take those three things and they taste so different from one to the other. And then you think about applying that where, it's never going to be that Tobalá tastes the same from one batch to the next because of all the different things that happen. That's going to be so different. So when they've got these recipes, the recipes are going to give them, you know, like some kind of framework, I guess, for the taste, but it's still not going to taste the same from one ensemble distillation to the next, even using the exact same formula each time.
Yeah. And I think that, and again, like that's why I'm so interested in asking more questions in this direction, because their answer might be, yeah, during the winter when we use Tobalá, we know that we need to change the percentage of Tobalá that if we do it into the summer.
Well, you keep asking more questions. I'm going to keep drinking more answers.
Okay. Okay. That did not make us go too far. So great. Okay. I think this is a wrap.
Hasta pronto.
Adiosito. This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one.
A Gabby Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.